Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and publisher of Heavy Metal Magazine. The only thing I like more than Justin Bieber is Five Saturday Night.
We will begin a mass invasion. We'll tell your people to surrender now and avoid war.
Don't think you can be so easily!
It is now time for us to put Earth under our rule.
It is your sacred duty to tell us the truth. Confess that we've been guilty of witchcraft.
You expect me to believe that you can overrun the entire world?
We cannot be defeated. We have never been defeated. That is the message to bring your people.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Sci-Fi Saturday Night.
Welcome to another Area 51 recording of Sci-Fi Saturday Night, the only podcast coated with a thin candy shell to help augment your auditory experience. Tonight, in episode 431, I've been told I have to say it now. I can't say 431. I have to say 431. We look forward with great anticipation to listening to people talk, because that's what we do. On board for tonight's talkcast, we actually have everybody, which is kind of like nice for a change. Sitting in at the Sci-Fi Saturday Night gaming console and help desk, our own button-pushing, keyboard-clacking, sonic screwdrivering, violent audio virtuoso, Kriana, it's her. Congratulations. I know. Considering the current circumstances, and the fact that Area 51's out of business. But other than that, yeah. Please
Did
welcome
we inherit money again?
Possibly. Please welcome Cyborg University's preeminent reference librarian, who is currently contracted at the Glitter Palace. She also loves saltwater taffy bites and enjoys constantly retuning waterproof ukuleles and adores renovating kitchens with all new appliances. It's our friend Zombrarian.
I do actually really like saltwater taffy.
I know.
Like a lot.
And I was just thinking.
Eat it though.
I know. You know it's one of those sinful pleasures that you have to do without.
It is. But it's 5 years since my surgery on my jaw, so that's exciting.
It is. Mm. What's also exciting is the fact that you have this beautiful now window that you can look out on your beautiful new backyard in your kitchen with its all new appliances.
Yeah. Woo! Someone very
stuff.
Nice must have gotten us some appliances to that kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And finally, blindfolded pasta making champion for 3 straight years, someone who has voraciously read every Jacqueline Suzanne novel over and over for no apparent reason, and a man who once met John Barrowman in an elevator and has refused to talk about it ever since, it's Captain Cam.
Well, who wouldn't want to keep that? What happens between John Barrowman and me in an elevator stays between John Barrowman and me in an elevator. That's all I'm
saying.
That
is the scariest goddamn thing you have ever said.
Thank you, Dome.
And me. I'm just a guy they call the Dome because that's my name. Tonight we are joined by Matthew Ross Crofton, the man behind Space Viking Productions. First of all, Matt, I got your name right once, correct?
It's closer to Crafton, but
okay, there's no there.
Yeah.
Okay. Just so we know, I've gotten his name wrong right off the bat, and that's not going to change.
Well, if you want to visualize me more German, Crofton is fine.
Okay. Well, I'll go with whatever works, yeah. Or however I happen to pronounce it at any point in time. He describes himself as a dreamer prone to wonder. I was reading your webpage and I just kind of went, that is the weirdest single phrase, a dreamer prone to wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about, before we get started with Space Viking Productions and Void Server and that kind of stuff, you talk about how early on in life, you kind of became obsessed with outer space, science fiction, fantasy, astronomy. How did that come about?
That's actually a really weird story of it was when I was very young. I never really had that much interest in science or astronomy when I was really, really little. It was like Tonka trucks and stuff and like playing in the sandbox and things like that. None of it was very like science based. So it really threw my mom for a loop when it was like 1 week. I just was like the space shuttle and satellites and how do we get up there and rocket ships and all this stuff. So it was from a very young age. It just randomly happened. And it actually freaked my mom out for a long time and made her start believing UFOs more. But that's a whole nother story.
Oh no, let's go right to that one. What did UFOs have to do with it?
Oh man, we had, I had a series of night terrors when I was very young. And it was the same week I was having the night terrors that I started to get really, really big into astronomy and science and outer space and interdimensional stuff. And like, apparently this is all like really fuzzy in my memory, but my mom describes it as alarming that all of a sudden her son was talking about interdimensional space aliens around the same time that her son was having night terrors.
So it was basically a light switch going off, and one day it was Tonka trucks and throwing rocks at each other, and the next day it was, ooh, shiny stuff in the sky. I think that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess another good explanation is that I've always loved the night sky, too, though. That's a real beginning for me, I must say. But it was really rather sudden that I started to get into the actual science behind it.
Well, not only the actual science, but also the science fiction writing aspect usually starts with the science fiction reading of it. And you talk about people like Isaac Asimov and Lewis Carroll as being your science fiction fantasy kind of guides in that. How did you first learn about them and what did they bring to you?
Lewis Carroll was definitely from elementary school. We definitely had a couple of classes that focused on the literature of Lewis Carroll. And then Isaac Asimov, I sort of discovered on my own because as I said before, my mother is a librarian and I used to spend countless nights with her at the library. She did on Thursday nights, she would do the nighttime shift. And after school, I would just go there and be there pretty much until 8 o'clock when they closed. And I would just pick up whatever book I could find and try to absorb it. And I remember I actually haven't read an entire Isaac Asimov book from front to back, because I would get distracted. I don't want to know what the next ideas he would have. So I would jump into the next book. So I can't even say which one's my favorite, but the iRobot was a big one for me too, because it just fascinated me.
The characterizations in iRobot were just absolutely amazing, as well as if you look at society now, an apt description of how people have become so compartmentalized and what its natural progression would be in that society. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an unbelievable situation that Asimov was really brilliant at figuring out long before it was actually going to occur.
He, those two writers were the biggest influences for Void Sever. I believe they were, primarily the writers that I focused on when it came to trying to come up with my own version of the stories. Especially Void Sever is directly inspired by Alice in Wonderland.
In some ways, when you're bringing fantasy aspects of it into your own writing and your own work, that certainly makes a lot of sense. So at that point, you were realizing that one of your real likes was astronomy, science, fiction, fantasy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, going from reading it to drawing it and writing it is a huge leap. How did that come about for you?
I've always been like a heavily, like, a very emotional person my entire life. And whenever, like, a big life change happens, like, say, the loss of a girlfriend or something, like, my mom ended up having hip surgery, and that was a huge stress on me. And when Void Sever was initially sort of, I almost want to say theorized, but that's not the right word. I'm thinking when the first concepts came to me, it was after a really bad breakup and like the idea of love being such a powerful thing. And then it started to get like real, like surrealist. My first initial sketches were very surrealist, almost like it wasn't intelligible. My first couple panels, like there was no way to tell what was going on. But everyone I showed it to was like, you have something here. So I'm like, I need something that this can actually be based on, and I need to get the science down. I need explanations for everything. I need a reason for everything. So that was when I remembered how much I loved Lewis Carroll and how surrealist it was. And I'm like, I can use this. So I started to look really deep into the concepts that Lewis Carroll had in Alice in Wonderland, and I wanted that same feeling. That same idea of the world is crashing down around you, but the surrealist nature and the other worlds that she was going into felt more comfortable than the real world.
And at the same time that you're writing about this story, you're also kind of drawing, sketching it out at the same time. When did your love of art come into play with this?
Oh, art's been a part of my life since I could hold a pencil. I'd like that. That's a really hard question to answer because.
When did you first start breathing? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly. I've always been an artist, but when it comes to this initial comic book, I didn't have any training in comic book art. I thought I was just going to do like book covers and stuff when it came to art. So when I met my buddy Jesse, who I do a lot of the conventions with, he was working on a comic book at the time, and he heard about the novel that I was working on, and he was like, why don't you take your writing skill and write a comic and then produce it? And that's where that initially happened. But yeah, when I initially start a story in my head, like you said, I usually sketch it first. And yeah, I've always been story driven. Art has always been my thing. Like even when I was really little, drawing, like starting, just getting into artwork, I always put a little story to it.
Okay, so that leads me to an interesting question about how you write and how you put it together. A lot of times when writers are doing a novel, they put together a Bible, and it says, here's this guy, this is what he looks like, this is what he does, this is how he acts. Mm-hmm. Here's this guy, he's related to this guy, blah, 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 blah. This one's married to this one. And they take that Bible and then kind of do a game of life to run the story. This is here, this goes here, this happens then. Sometimes with comic book people who are also the writers, they're not just comic book people come in two flavors. There's ones who are just writers. There are ones who are just you just do the illustrations. And there is the rare breed every once in a while who does the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're one of those.
Yeah, and I kind of accidentally fell into that where I just didn't have, at the time, I didn't have access to other writers to write the story for me, or I didn't have access to someone who would do the inking. You know, I was like, well, I've always wanted to produce something in general, and I'm like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to make the whole thing because I
had the artwork. So you taught yourself how to make it work.
Pretty much. I actually, on this first issue, I'm actually pretty excited for the second issue, because on the first issue, I wasn't quite sure how to do dialogue, how to write it beforehand and then draw it. And I've been studying the Jack Kirby method, where they would do most of the artwork first and then put dialogue in after. And I'm like, well, that seems interesting, because I love doing action. Like I could just draw all of the stuff that the characters are doing and then figure out dialogue after that. And I feel like that'd be a lot more fluid for me because of the way I have the story in my head.
So instead of putting a storyboard together, my question is, do you like see the characters first? I mean, do you get a visual of the character in your head?
I mean, I could go over the whole process I did for this first issue.
Go for it. Absolutely.
I had my little emotional event that happened, and then I started doing those sketches that were purely like just getting feelings out of my head. And then these characters came up, these spacesuits, these two characters that were working really hard to complete this mission. They just sort of showed up out of my feelings. That sounds kind of hokey, but that's exactly what happened. And after that, I had to do something with those sketches. That was like a first draft. And so I started to design their ship because I was like, okay, if we're going to take this out of the surrealist realm a little bit to make it more readable, I need a home base for these characters. And I designed the ship first before I even designed the characters or where they were going to go or why or how. And it's because I just love doing vehicles. Like, that's why it sort of came about. It was this one like sketch I did about 2 years ago, just at random, because I've always wanted to do a ship that has an axe blade on the front. And this design came out, and I'm like, that's it. That's the one I need. That's their home base. So that was how I started with that. And then I designed the characters to sort of go along with the post-apocalyptic world that I built. And from there, it sort of all fell into place because I knew a lot of stuff I liked about other science fiction stories. And I knew I wanted the Lewis Carroll influence in there. So a lot of it started to write itself, almost in the way you were just talking about with how you use a Bible. But I didn't actually write any of it down. It was more just like I knew the feelings that I wanted to convey to the reader.
So the interesting thing from my point of view is that without having a Bible, but knowing, you know, knowing like a good improv team, here's where we start, here's where we end, here's what has to happen in between.
Mm-hmm.
That you can then sit down and decide whether or not you do it with words or you do it visually and then mm-hmm. plug in the missing parts as you go. I would imagine that there are points at which you do a little bit of both.
Yeah, exactly. I do have a script that I wrote. Mm-hmm. Like, so I do follow something, but when it comes to the visual storytelling, I didn't write much in there. Maybe just, oh, they're on a beach, and that's about all I would write. And then everything else would be as I was sketching it.
So explain to me a little bit about the story, Void Server. I've seen the first 14 pages.
Yeah,
it's a compelling story, both visually and from a storytelling aspect, but I understand it more now having heard you talk about how you set it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually been gelling more as you go along. So if you can, yeah, for the listeners, kind of explain mm-hmm. what the story is.
Let's see. Do you want me to summarize or can I go a bit more in depth?
Do what you want to do, man. This is for you to. It doesn't have to be a 20-second elevator pitch at all.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. 20-second elevator pitch. I've tried to do the 20-second elevator pitch to people at the conventions, and it's so hard with this story because I'm trying to do so many things at once.
Yep, I understand that now better than I did before.
Yeah, because we have. Basically, we have the characters Seth and Rona, who are commanding the IDVSD Void, Sky Sever, sort of allude to the title of the comic book. Sorry, are you saying Server or Sever?
Yes,
because it's Void Sever. I just wanted to. I didn't want to correct you because I wasn't sure if you.
Oh,
if
no, 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 no! You must always correct me.
Okay, because that's a very common thing. I didn't see it pop up until I started selling it at the conventions. Of like, some people will say server, because it just rolls off the tongue really well like that. But it's Sever.
It kind of seems to, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but so
actually, I'm looking at the PDF now. Going, damn, I'm an idiot.
It's okay. I hate correcting people because I know when I'm corrected, I'm like, oh, you know.
But oh, no, trust me. I've been corrected by some of the smartest people in the universe, and I realized just how dumb I could be. When Stanton Friedman, who's got three doctorates under his belt, will sit and correct me during an interview. Yeah, I'm good. No problem.
I can't imagine how that felt. I'm sorry.
It felt great because he was absolutely right, and I was missing the point.
Ooh. So let me try to, I'm trying to focus my thoughts here because honestly, I've been working on like several other projects in the meantime. Like I haven't even started working on issue number 2 because all these other projects popped up, but, getting Thinking Void Sever again. Let's see here. We have Seth and Rona who command the IDVSD Sky Sever, which is the name of the ship that I've sort of built the story around. Because I love designing ships. So that's how I started. It sort of was birthed from my love of Star Trek and Star Wars, how the ship designs are so iconic. Mm-hmm. And especially in Star Trek, the ship itself becomes a character. And like, I remember the first time that the Enterprise blew up. I was like, no, I was so upset. Like a character had just died. So I wanted to sort of convey that in my own story as well, that the ship is just as important as the other characters. And they command the ship, and it is one of 3 ships that is part of a very important mission to find a new home for humanity. Now, this takes place about 9,000 years from now. The original Earth, no one even remembers what happened to it. We're living on a planet that's not great for us. It's habitable, but just barely. Like, we're struggling. So they finally get back out into space. And they invent this technology, and they build 3 ships around it. Now, the technology is the interdimensional void-severing drive, which is where the name of the comic book comes from, is that it's an engine that channels intense electromagnetic energy to literally tear a hole into another dimension, to basically skip a ton of time to get to another planet. And this drive is basically the only way that they can get to other planets. So let me see, I'm trying to make sure that I'm cohesive here.
Just do your best. You're doing fine.
So these Seth and Rona are sent out, but the ship is a very complicated ship when it comes to the way the drive works. Even with 100 people on board, they would never be able to do the calculations necessary to navigate the other dimension. So they have an AI on board as well, and that's where the other character comes in, the Cog, who is a steampunk wolf, who's just an AI. That's his representation when the holograms show him. He's a steampunk sort of cyborg wolf that pops up and serves as a bit of the comic relief, but also an integral character to keeping the story going, because without him, the ship can't go where it's supposed to go. Thing is, the journeys in between planets still take about 3 months. So the crew has to go into a form of cryosleep, but it's the dreamscape chamber that they go into. So in order to keep from developing psychosis within their own minds while they're asleep, they are put into a sort of virtual reality where it's a dream state that they can control and that the AI also controls. So that's where the through the looking glass aspect comes in. Mm-hmm. Of they, in between the space between the home planet and their destinations to see where they can find a new home for humanity, they are in this virtual reality world that they can train, or they can relax, or they can learn. Like it's like educational if they want as well. Or it can be purely like, say they just went through a stressful time on their last mission. They need something to center their mind and keep themselves from going deeper into psychosis.
But what we see in this in book 1 is, I believe, their first jump.
Mm-hmm. This is their first jump.
Because we watch them bickering over, did anybody bother to read what's supposed to happen and how you're supposed to do it?
So this that kind of gets into a bit of the character personalities. Like Seth is the militaristic type. He's definitely the strategist and the equipment. Like he's good with all the equipment and stuff. And then Rona is much more the analyst. Like she's the worrier. She will worry more about what's going on because that's her job on the mission. She's supposed to be the one doing the checks and balances and being more cautionary, whereas Seth is a man of action. And Seth is the one that has looked into the actual briefing because he wants to be, you know, prepared for whatever comes forward. Whereas Rona doesn't quite trust the technology, so she'd rather figure out how to do it herself beforehand. And that sort of was what causes that interaction.
So at this point, book one is done?
Yeah, issue one is done. Book one is a bit far off, though. Like, are you talking volumes or issues?
Issue, I'm sorry.
Yeah, issue number one. Issue number one is finished.
And you're working on, along with two other projects, issue number two.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you're keeping busy. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Have you planned out how many, not how many issues, but how far this story goes? Do you have a timeline for that at this point?
Not really a timeline yet, because I'm not sure how long, like I'm really new to creating comics, so I'm not even sure how long it takes me to complete an issue. In the middle of working on issue one, my father actually passed away. So the timeline for working on that was all over the place.
Sure. The real world has a way of doing that, for sure.
Yeah. Indeed.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
To answer your question, though, the timeline for issue two, I'm looking at in summer at the latest, because these other projects shouldn't take too long, and then I can start working on that. And I was hoping to have issue number two done for Bangor Comic Con in April. Mm-hmm. But I'm planning 10 issues for the initial plot arc that I'm on, sort of following the same. There's a lot of different allegories I could run into with these same characters in the same setup, but the initial Alice in Wonderland allegory that I'm running with, this is what's going to follow these 10 issues that I plan.
So on top of writing, producing, drawing, you had to also learn how to become an independent comic creator.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah.
And I mean, you know, that's a very tricky road. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, I do not know because I do not know until you get to that point where you have to learn it real quick. So yeah. How difficult was the world of independent comic creation for you?
Did it with a little help from my friends, I guess. I mean, I had a lot of people that I knew that had already produced comic books independently that they definitely helped me with, like, weird questions I had, like, how do I deal with copyright? Like, can I just print it and throw a copyright thing on there? And it turns out...
You were told, oh, God, no, don't do that.
Mm-hmm. I was told to just make sure that everything was clearly marked as when I completed it and that there was a Creative Commons. That's what I've been told. There's a Creative Commons copyright that every creation sort of falls under. But you do need to actually send something to Congress, the Library of Congress, to get an official stamp or something like that.
Yeah, you kind of do. Mm-hmm. The government wants you to be official and all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
And then you figured out where we met you. You figured out the whole con business. How did that? Yeah, that's another weird place to end up.
That world is actually very natural for me. That was where I started before I even started working on Void Sever. I started out back in 2009 when I was just like, I have all this art and I'm not doing anything with it. And my mother was like, why don't you sell it to farmers markets? Like, I'm sure someone will buy it. And I'm like, all my stuff is science fiction and nerdy and weird. And I don't know, maybe someone will buy it. So I just signed up for the farmers markets and started selling at those. And then before too long, I was getting these people that were like, I'm going to buy this painting, but if my wife comes around, I wasn't here. You know, like they were closet nerds that they'd never seen anyone at the farmers markets like that before. And it was like exhilarating for me. I'm like, yes, I will help my fellow nerds find artwork.
Perfect.
And then flash forward a couple of years of doing that. And that ended up like kind of drying up because once I had tapped my local market, no one was buying art from me anymore because I'd found, well, there was only like a handful of people that lived up here that were into science fiction.
And they're done.
Yeah, exactly. So I would get a handful of people, like tourists, that would buy some work. And then actually the writer I'm currently working with for one of these projects, I met his parents at one of these farmers markets, and that's how I know him. He's out.
That's incredibly weird.
I know, it was so strange. He's out from he was initially from out west at the time. He was out west, which is why they bought the first the prologue to Void Sever. I technically have two issues of Void Sever out that I should mention. The first one is a prologue. It's like issue zero. And that was something that I produced like 100% myself, even the printing, and it ended up being extremely costly. But that's what his parents bought, and that's how I know him. So the farmers markets is where I got my start for real. And then and I met my buddy Jesse, who was just starting out doing conventions at the time. And after months of him and his wife bugging me to come with them to one of these conventions, I finally went to Portland Comic Con one year and helped them. And I was just exhilarated by the, like, this is where the nerdy people are. Like, I was so excited to be there. And that's why I started selling it at the conventions. So and that was all before I even produced the first issue. I hope that answers your question. I don't know if I jumped around too much. Dome, are you there?
Dome, I think you're on mute.
You're right, I am. No, I mean, it's fine because you're jumping around all over the place just like I've been. And of course, you know, and we've also been talking for over half an hour already.
Mm-hmm.
And while I would love to talk to you about where Space Vikings came from, what Wastelander is about, and your work on Pendulum, which are all other kind of interesting things going on,
I can answer those questions pretty quickly for you if you'd like.
Go for it.
All right, so Space Viking came from, I was originally called The Art of the Norse, and people kept mistaking Norse for nose, and I'm like, I need something different. And I've always been, I'm actually 15% Scandinavian, so I've always been really big into Norse mythology. So I was like, okay, I love space, I love Vikings, I'm going to be Space Viking Productions from now on. And as for Wastelander, that's my novel that I've been working on for 8+ years because I want it to be just right. I've rewritten it like 6 times. And then, let's see, Pendulum is a project that may never be finished because I want every panel to be a high-quality, high-fidelity digital painting. It's a comic book project, but it's extremely complicated. I'm only on page 5 and I've been working on it for 6 years because I want it to be, that's another one that I want to be just right. But if I do ever complete an issue of it and it gains speed somehow, I would love to eventually complete that. But Void Sever was a much simpler, easier project to actually see made into something.
So how many conventions are you planning on doing this year?
This is going to be a smaller year for me. Last year ended up being, I don't know how to say it nicely. There's no one was buying. Like, it wasn't a very good year when it comes to actually having it be worth my while to go to these conventions. Mm-hmm. So this year I'm only planning maybe, you know, three or four. If I can get to one or two in between that is just more convenient, I might do that too. So I'm saying maybe five at the most.
Are you contracted for any now where people can know about it?
I'm definitely going to be at Bangor Comic Con. Was it Bangor Comic and Toy Con? Which is in April 23rd, I think. I'm not sure what the actual date is.
Okay, we'll check that out. Not a problem.
I know it's the weekend of the 25th for sure.
All righty. So if you get to see Matt at a con, he's got his comics, he's got his artwork. It's interesting, it's original, and if you think we've been all over the place tonight, if you see his artwork, it kind of defies a logical pigeonhole for it. But it's all interesting. It's all fun. It's all very much Matt Crafton. And Matt, I can't thank you enough for joining us on the show tonight.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor.
Oh, I don't know about honor, but it's been at least fun.
It's been very fun.
I appreciate it very much. Great. Thank you so much, man.
You're welcome.
Sci-Fi Saturday Night is the official podcast of GraniteCon, Plastic City Comic-Con, and BooksandBooze.com. We are also sponsored by Dreamforge Magazine, a magazine of fantasy and science fiction, and Comic Art House. Visit Comic Art House for some of the best deals on original art from dozens of your favorite artists. If you're looking for a really great gift book idea for the rapidly approaching National Punctuation Day celebration, consider a look at Sci-Fi Saturday Night's first anthology, My Peculiar Family, now on Amazon and at BarnesandNoble.com. My Particular Family, the audiobook, is also available on Audible, because I'm not really sure where else you could possibly find an audiobook these days. Our intro production was provided by Rob Watts. For more of his amazing stuff, just look at robwattsonline.com. And don't forget to try the Watts sauce. It's the hot. Our outro music was provided by Lawrence Made Me Cry. Check out more of their grooves on lawrencemademecry.com. A big hello to JoJo and Celine. Many thanks to the gang from the Peabody Time Tunnel, the sweetheart of the soundboard, Kriana, and woman of words, Librarian. Thank you so much, ladies. And from his booking books, thank you, Captain Cam. This is Dome saying, Terry and Jeannie, shared pain is lessened, shared joy increased. Thus do we all refute entropy. We'll talk soon, Stacy, and stay strong, Liz. So unless it's daytime, good night, everyone.
This is my brother, Yakko.